Something I love and I admire about the Irish people. I studied a little bit of history since I've been here. I found out you've been underdogs for years, hundreds of years. People dominating you and ruling you. And you can identify with this freedom struggle, you understand? But I just have mine on the other side of the water. But we all are fighting for the same cause and idea, but we have different reasons and different approaches.
It's tough. Like I said, it's just a disgrace. It's just a shame. There's no doubt about the fight.
I don't know what I'm dealing with tonight. I'm fighting someone who is mechanically orientated, and that is just an unknown area. It's not fair that I should be put in this situation.
In many ways, that was one of my bravest performances. That was one of my, you know, my best performances under the circumstances.
If Brian McGuigan had been around today, or I'd have been in his day, I'd have knocked that boy's fork out, regardless how much people like him. And how good he was.
Michael Carruth is the champion of the Olympic Games! Michael Carruth is the champion, the champion, the champion!
I'm gonna go home and break my wife's hip. I ain't had sex with her in a while. She's gonna feel the pain.
And the pleasure.
Oh, it's gonna be some pleasure mixed in there, but she might be crippled in the mornings.
Grow on your way, Mary Robinson, motherfuckity, hashtag the door to down, shuddy and down, town rushach a gaudy, need an own gaudy at a rushach, tuck knachara, tuck kaliknachara, tashi long ga aid, a gusduchi raid, go to Jebwin to Katie Taylor.
Hi there, and welcome to Four Thumps Irish Boxing Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Byrne of the Irish Sun, and I'm joined here today by Kieran Gallagher of the Irish Daily Mail. We'll also be getting insight from five-time Irish senior champion, international boxer, European senior bronze medalist, and just all-around good guy, Eric Donovan. Welcome.
Thanks, Kev. Super excited about the Four Thumps, which we'll later elaborate on. Four Thumps Irish Boxing Podcast. Looking forward to bringing you, the Irish public and boxing fans, the best in the business.
And we have a great show lined up today as well. Eric, what have we got?
Well, we're going to be speaking to Andy Lee, good friend of mine, former teammate of mine, who is on the verge of announcing a big world title showdown with Matt Korobov, one of the greatest amateur boxers I've ever had the experience of training alongside. So, looking forward to speaking to Andy. He's going to be joining us very soon.
Kieran, we also did something a bit different for our first show. Give us a little taste. Explain, please.
Yeah, we had a fantastic interview with Katie Taylor and also a bit of insight from Pete Tedder. We visited the high performance unit there at the National Stadium. And it's particularly a unique interview, I suppose, in the sense that we've heard from Katie in so many arenas and after fights, but this is immediately after a spar. We had Eric and Katie in the ring at the same time, and we kind of get an immediate reaction and a bit of insight into the spar as it goes along as well. So it's some interesting stuff.
Brilliant. Well, we have a bit of a news round here, so we'll discuss the various issues of the day. Ireland this week sent a team to the European Youth Championships, secured just the one medal, which almost seems surprising because we've become accustomed to them, you know, coming back laden with stuff. But Eric, it was a clubmate of yours, Johnny Joyce.
Yeah, well done to Johnny Joyce. You know, that's a silver medal in the European Youth. He's a former European schoolboy and European junior gold medalist. So he was confident he could have done the 3 out of 3, but he came up against a good Italian opponent in the final. It was a really good fight. He gave his all. We didn't expect anything less of him, but he's come home a European Youth silver medalist. Fantastic achievement, and one that the club is very, very proud of. Young Willie Donoghue was also in the European Youth Championships. He's a former world junior champion, and we were expecting him to medal also, but he came up short in the last 8. Didn't perform very well, but he'll have to come back to the drawing board, I suppose. John Joe's first cousin is Joe Ward. That's the kind of calibre of cousins that John Joe has. Yeah. And I've sparred with him personally myself, but I've noticed over the past number of years he's been growing at a rapid rate. And I was talking to Joe in the high performance gym a couple of weeks back, and I said, Joe, geez, he could be 81 before you know it, you know? Yeah. And Joe said, no, he won't. He won't weigh in where I am. So, it's funny, but I tell you, he's definitely putting up the weight and he's getting strong. I think he's a welterweight now, but he's a really, really tough guy, hard hitter.
Well, I saw a Facebook update from just immediately after the fight, and he just was complaining about how difficult it's been for him to lose the weight, even to get to 69 kilos. He said, next time he weighs in at a competition, he's going to be 75 kilos. And I think he's just 16.
That's all.
And
yeah,
his opponent was 18 in this European Youth final. What sort of a difference does that make?
A huge difference, because, like, you know, psychologically, like, even the guys that he's boxing are a lot more mature than him, a little bit more experience than he has. So he has more time to develop from a maturing point of view, but also a condition, physical point of view. I feel he's going to, it's going to be very, very difficult to keep him down on the weight, because if you look at his body fat, there's not much body fat on him. He's really, really lean and he's in good shape.
Broad,
and
yeah.
Yeah, he's proper, you know, he's proper chiseled out, like, you know, he's a lot of shape and muscles on him. So it's going to be hard to hold him in the weight.
Do you think it'll be a disappointment for the team to come home with just one silver medal, bearing in mind as well, I think it was last year at the World Championships, they came away with nothing as well. There's a lot of talent in this team. Like, we saw Gary Cully from Nace. I think there was four boxers defeated in the quarterfinals, all in medal bouts. So I guess, you know, you get the rub of a different decision at that stage, and all of a sudden a championship of one medal is a championship of three or four. Well, they will be disappointed with just one medal, I think.
Yeah, I suppose so, because at one stage it looked like we were going to get a handful of medals, because there was four and five lads going, I think it was four, went through to the quarterfinals. But if you look at in Gary Cully's case, he's a 60 kilo boxer. He got a phone call a week before they departed for the European Championships, and he was asked, you know, will he compete at 64 kilos, you know, yeah. Which is, you know, it's almost three quarters of a stone heavier than his normal boxing weight, and he's only recently moved up to 60 kilos. So, you know, he gave a good account of himself out there, you know, in terms of getting to the quarterfinals. And then if you look at the other guys, because it's very, very tough. The quarterfinals in any tournament, Olympics, Worlds or Europeans, is the hardest place to be, because to lose means you lose a medal.
Well, we saw a lot of the passion kind of spill over in the tournament as well with the Croatian boxer. Like, one conflict journalists and boxers often have is, you know, why couldn't you put my good achievements in the paper? And it doesn't often always work like that. Unfortunately, a story like this happens and it gets massive worldwide publicity. So, to just put in context what I'm talking about, you've probably out there seen the video already of the Croatian boxer Vido Lonkar. He'd been stopped by the referee on his feet. He had his hands up. He looked kind of ready to defend himself. And then he went back to the corner. And what happened next, Ciarán?
Yeah, well, he basically assaulted the referee. Not only gave him a knockout blow, continued to hit him while he was on the canvas. His corner seemed very reluctant to intervene until probably a few blows had landed on his opponent scarpered from the ring as well. I think it's very...
He did a runner, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a very interesting point you make, though, because, I mean, there's news outlets out there, which would be basically the online sources for national publications, and they have videos of this up when they wouldn't really be as thorough in terms of the coverage of boxing otherwise. That's not really to try to have a go at anyone. It's just, it highlights the fact that attention's being deflected from the sport and from a tournament, and a lot of it's focused on such a negative aspect. I mean, it's freakish, and I mean, naturally a lot of people's reaction when they first see it is to laugh. As far as I'm aware, the Croatian boxer's actually been arrested subsequently, and I mean, it's probably going to be criminal charges involved, but I suppose it's absolutely bizarre circumstances, and it's such a strange thing to see in the ring. I know Eric has a bit of insight for kind of being in a similar heated scenarios or in heated arenas when it's threatened to spill over.
Yeah, like, you look, in boxing we try to promote discipline, you know, we try to promote you know, discipline, and we try to encourage people to keep their emotions in check, but like at the same time we try to promote aggression and you know, skill and determination. But what happened there was the guy was stopped. He was basically stopped by the referee, and I think you have to have respect for the officials, for the referee, for the officials. And he would be a prime example of not being able to keep his emotions in check. I've been stopped before, and I was unhappy with the refs and unhappy with the judging as well. I've been stopped one time on a 20-point rule in the second round, which suggested I was 20 points down in probably 3 minutes into the fight, which is ludicrous, really, because it was a 50-50 fight. How can I be 20 points down? But that rule is done away with now. It's done. But I had to keep my emotions in check. And like, what it done for me was it gave me more motivation to go back and train harder. But that young boxer just really couldn't keep his emotions in check, and he just lashed out. And it was appalling, really. It was shocking.
There's been a suggestion as well, as though the coaches nearly encouraged him, which I don't know was an attempt to deflect the responsibility of the boxer, or to try to lessen the punishment on him. But realistically, in terms of kind of perpetuating the false impression that many people have of boxing, and often its critics will say that it's thuggish or otherwise, it does mean the fact that the boxer has to be disciplined, and disciplined severely. Now, as far as I know, there's been a temporary life ban that's been handed down to him, which is very unfortunate, especially for a rush of blood to the head if it is just a once-off moment. But I suppose you have to throw the rule book at someone over it, because otherwise it doesn't
open season on referees.
Doesn't rid people of that false perceptions if people take it up that way.
It does. The book lies with the boxer, you know what I mean? And he should be disciplined, and he should be disciplined hard, because it was an appalling act. And to be honest, when the final bell goes, you embrace, you shake hands, and that's the end of it. That's the sportsmanship.
You're telling me a story about a Frankie Gavin fight you remember at a tournament where something on a similar
level? It was similar, yeah. It was 2006 in the European Championships in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. Frankie Gavin was boxing the Turkish boxer. Can't remember his name, but Frankie also stopped him on the 20-point rule. I think maybe the third round. To watch the fight, to witness the fight, it looked like Frankie gave this guy a boxing lesson. But when the blower went for the signal, the 20-point rule margin has been exceeded. The fight stopped, and the Turkish boxer actually turned into a madman, a crazy man, and he pulled off his gloves and he started firing them at Frankie, and he fired the left glove at him, then he fired the right, and I never seen Frankie. It was like Usain Bolt. He jumped out of the ring and ran out of the stadium. Oh, it was so funny, because you think he gave this guy a boxing lesson, now this guy turns into the Hulk and he starts ripping off the gloves and firing them at, and there's a difference between boxing and madness, you know. It's just that there's no comparison. So Frankie said, "I'm over here, good luck."
But a slick boxer like you, Eric, would know that you'd pick apart a madman in the ring like
that. You would.
You'd want, don't you?
You're right, Kevin. You know, there's nothing more I love than being in a fight and I have the guy in front of me losing the head and throwing the kitchen sink at me without any kind of method in his work and not thinking about what he's doing, because he's playing right into my hands then. You know, boxing, aggression is so important in boxing, but, you know, it has to be done you have to have a plan. You have to have a plan of what you're doing. The tactics have to be carried out. If you're going in there and you're in a red mist and you're fighting with true anger, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You're going to get seriously hurt. So, yes, you have to keep your emotions in check, and yes, you have to be on the ball every second of every round, because it's the hurt business. It's the hurt game.
Right, lads, I want to move on to the APB, the much heralded new venture from AIBA, the World Governing Body, which allows boxers to kind of box as professionals but maintaining their Olympic eligibility. So it's in a murky grey area whether it's pro or amateur. But anyway, Joe Ward, as we spoke about earlier on, and David Oliver Joyce both made their debuts this week, and both ended in defeat. Now, it was a kind of difficult way for them both to get going. Joe Ward was defeated by a Russian boxer, Nikita Ivanov, in Bulgaria, a boxer he's beaten before. And David Oliver Joyce was beaten by, and bear with me here because I've never said his name aloud, but Berik Abrakmanov.
Just call him the Kazakh.
Kazakh in
Kazakhstan. Yeah. You can't argue when you call him the Kazakhstan boxer, because I've spent 8 months in Kazakhstan myself, and I tell you, I've called them by their weights. You know, the 60 kg boxer, or the 64 kg guy, or the 69. That's I had numbers on them. Yeah. But
I'm sure we'll discuss the ins and outs of APB in different shows, and we'll see as it progresses, and we may even do an awful lot more. But just on a professional or whatever, on a boxing level, it's going to be disappointing for those two boys to lose their debuts.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's inevitable that we have to have some criticism in a sense to say the fact that none of us have got to see the belts as of yet, seeing as though the APB haven't been too forthcoming in their coverage. And I mean,
it's been absolutely shocking. But
yeah, in terms of the launch, it wasn't ideal. Thankfully, the Irish Association did have a brief lunch over here. I got the opportunity to speak to both Joe and Davey before they headed off, and both of them were very keen on the whole format, the opportunity that they might be able to qualify for Rio through this tournament. And losing the first bout, a massive blow, because in terms of the structure of the tournament, basically their opportunity to qualify through the first season is now gone, because they essentially are dropped into a nearly second tier. So the loss isn't just a loss in terms of setting them back for the tournament, but also setting them back for Rio, because they have to wait until next year now for another shot at qualifying for the Olympics. As far as I understand, David Oliver was very unlucky, I think, a majority of the decision, so he did enough to scrape a draw on one judge's card. But like with an impressive performance by all accounts to be able to go to Kazakhstan, fight his opponent in his own backyard, and push him so close. Joe will be obviously, I'd imagine, tremendously disappointed. He, as far as I know, he's beaten Ivanov 3 times in international competitions. Most recently as the Chemistry Cup, and they fought before, I think, in the Europeans and in the Worlds as well.
Joe's got done a cup once before as well.
Yeah, so like, I mean, he's bound to be absolutely gutted over that. But I suppose at least they are involved in the competition, and as far as I'm aware, they still have the opportunity to qualify through the standard major, traditional amateur tournaments for the Worlds and the Europeans, because I think the Irish Association did quite a good job in negotiating that. I'm not sure whether Fergal Carruth or who was the brains behind it, but it's important, I suppose, having as many avenues as you can get to Rio, because the loss now to their early chance of qualification is gone is a huge setback, unfortunately.
Eric, how often do we see reports coming in from like way out foreign, like well out in Eastern Europe, where the coaches all said he did enough to win, but the Irish boxer doesn't give the decision? How accurate do you think that is? Like, do coaches tell you, oh, you should have won, just to kind of blow smoke up you? Or do you think that would be genuine? Do you think the word coming back from David Oliver's corner was that he should have won that fight in Kazakhstan? Bearing in mind, it is difficult to talk about a fight that we haven't been able to see yet.
I think you have to see it to believe it. But like, when you look at you know, David Oliver's style, and you know, he's actually so suited to that professional kind of boxing, that game, the APB, and you know, when the APB was you know, launched, I said that this would be the perfect route for David Oliver to qualify for the Rio Olympic Games, and because it just suits him, it suits him perfectly to his style of boxing. And not only that, he boxed a Kazakhstan boxer in Finland in the final of the Tamar tournament just a couple of months back,
and the Chemistry Cup,
and the Chemistry Cup earlier this year, so he beat him convincingly in both occasions. But this time, his debut in the APB was in Kazakhstan, in this guy's back garden, and Kazakhstan is probably one of the biggest powerhouses in amateur boxing, and I don't say that too lightly.
Yeah, and you obviously know this from experience, because as most of our knowledgeable listeners will be aware of, Eric boxed for the Kazakhstan Ireland's team in the World Series of Boxing the season they won the title, and boxed against Joyce for Kazakhstan while Joyce is in Germany. Unique stuff. But you know all about boxing in Kazakhstan, and it's a real hotbed of a country, and it's a difficult place to go.
It is. It's very difficult. But like, even if with the connection between AIBA and Kazakhstan, and I don't want to say, like, you know, that there's strings being pulled. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that AIBA has a lot of camps set up in Kazakhstan. They have a training base for the referees and judges. They have I think it's the first in the world AIBA training academy. It's in Kazakhstan as well, you know, boxing training academy for officials, coaches, referees. So there's a lot of connections between AIBA and Kazakhstan. There's a lot of money being invested into AIBA boxing through Kazakhstan as well, by way of gas, oil, and etc. You know, it's a big powerhouse in terms of amateur boxing. So, I mean,
Davey
had the stacks. Yeah, he really had. He was up against it. Look, I'm not making any excuses or anything, because I know Davey Oliver gives his absolute
all. He's not
all.
A man to make an excuse either, is he?
No, he's not.
He doesn't do it. Like,
he steps into the ring all the time and he gives his all. You know, when we spoke earlier on about the quarterfinals of a major championship, how the difference between winning and losing. Every fight in the APB is like that quarterfinals. It's like that quarterfinals. You need to win every fight in the APB if you're going to qualify for Rio Olympics. So, look, it's not the kind of results I was looking forward to, not the ones I was expecting. The two of them came up short, Joe Ward and Joe. I mean, all they can do now is keep believing and keep plugging away, because they can't come back. They're signed up now. They're signed up with the APB.
I think as well, it's a very, very tough start to begin with. Like, I mean, the fact that you're boxing against the top fighters in the world, you're never going to get an easy draw, whereas at some of the tournaments you might sneak through for one or two rounds where you might get a relatively easier fight, whereas this, they were really thrown in at the deep end. And as far as I'm aware, I think Joe might have had some travel problems as well for getting over to Sofia.
Yeah, he was stuck in Dublin Airport, I think.
So, I mean, you don't know how that would affect their preparations either. And then, I mean, for Joyce having to go abroad to his opponents' backyard, I mean, that's a test in itself. So hopefully, I mean, it's I suppose a learning experience might be a bit of a cliche, but hopefully it helps them adapt to the tournament.
Yeah, they'll be looking towards the World Championships next year to get to the Olympics that route.
Absolutely, and I suppose it's probably ideal preparation in the sense that they're going to have another three fights in this tournament that's going to be against top class opposition. So, I mean, it's probably the best preparation that they can get heading into the new year anyway.
we want to get to our main event, Katie Taylor. She's looking to win her fifth World Championships medal next month in Jeju in Korea. She's already won 5 European medals and, of course, that unforgettable Olympic gold. As you'll find out, our man here, Eric Donovan, has been instrumental in Katie's success. Last week, we took a trip down to the National Stadium as Katie Taylor was dusting off her preparations for Jeju, and we can bring you this.
August 10 points to 9. Katie Taylor! Katie Taylor, champion of Europe, champion of Bowen, champion of Olympics and Joe!
Hard day's work.
Yeah, it's always a, you know, you're in for a tough shift when you get in the ring with Katie Taylor. She's probably the only boxer I know who's never, I've never seen go through the motions. Everything is world class. So if you're coming in here, if I thought I was coming in here to have a half-hearted day, I'd be a foolish man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard day, yeah. Obviously, Eric is one of the trickiest opponents he didn't come across in the Southpaw as well, so it's great preparation for me for the World Championships, and I think one of my main opponents will be Hachi Gab, and obviously she's a Southpaw as well, and also very tricky, so this is just, you know, perfect preparation for me.
Can you describe exactly kind of what you're trying to work on just over those few rounds?
Yeah. I'm just trying to get my phone to the outside and trying to make him lead and try to counter. You know, he's a great counter puncher, so I was trying to make him lead and then counter his counter, kind of. So,
how difficult is it to make a Southpaw lead like that? What sort of things do you have to do to make it happen?
Just loads and loads of things, really, and just try to. It's important that not the punch from too far away as well. That's how you get caught with a Southpaw. So just trying to get your feet in position and put him under pressure to kind of punch first.
In terms of your training, having such a competitive spar, is this the training that you really enjoy in comparison to kind of the extra work that goes on outside of the ring?
Yeah, I think the sparring is probably the most enjoyable part of it, really. That's the closer you can actually get to a fight, and that's where you see what's working for you, what you need to work on as well. So these are the kind of spars that make the difference, I think, between winning and losing, I think.
What about yourself, Eric? Is enjoyable the wrong word, or is it too tough to be enjoyable?
No, it is enjoyable. I don't think it cannot be enjoyable when you're sparring with an Olympic champion, you know? I mean, we only have one female Olympic champion in the country and one male. It's not every day you get to spar one of them. Like I said before, Katie doesn't go through the emotions. I've never, ever in my life, as long as I know her, heard her complain or give out or, you know, cause a fuss. Well, why is that, Katie? Do you consciously choose not to give a fuss about anything or not complain?
No, not really. I think it's just, you're not going to get things your own way, either. You have to just get on with things and make the most of every situation, really. And
you see, I need to take a leaf out of her book, you know, because I can be giving out with myself all the time, you know, over training, schedules, time different. No, but I've learned.
There's definitely times where I don't want to get up training as well, but there today is a. Definitely count, don't you? You have to kind of push yourself.
That's it, Katie. And I think, like, you know, boxing would be a prime example of having to keep your emotions in check, you know, because it's a game, you know, as Katie, you said before, you don't play boxing, you know. Boxing is a very, very serious game, and, you know, if you don't take it seriously, you can get hurt. So I need to take a leaf out of Katie's book, keep my emotions in check and focus on the fight ahead and the journey ahead, because that's what it is a journey, isn't
it? Yeah, that's ups and downs, a lot of setbacks along the way, but that's what makes it so special as well. I think when you come out with victories, you kind of look back, and that's what makes it worthwhile, I think.
You know, during the 6 rounds there, I noticed that you've got, like, you know, people ask me this question, has Katie Taylor still got it? You know, will she retire after the Olympics or whatever? But she's getting better. You're getting better and better every fight and every round. You live a good life, you know, a healthy lifestyle. You know, and what are you in the 28?
Yeah.
28 now, sure, like, she's in her prime. She's even in better form now than she was 2 years ago at the Olympic Games. This is a prime age, 28, 29, 30, so I don't think she should slow down. Like, you know, people ask me that question, is she going to retire, is she going to give it up? But she's loving it. This is her life. This is what she does. She lives and breathes it. If she stops boxing, what's she going to do? What's the question? That's the question.
So. Yeah, the 28's old, we're all in trouble then.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly. It's all downhill.
But there's no doubt about it. You've won everything. But I'm really admired by the hunger that you have to turn up to the gym every day after after winning so much.
Yeah, I think just even defending those titles is a huge challenge for me as well. And I want to make history in my sport, and I want to, you know, leave a great legacy behind me as well. And I think if you keep defending those titles, that's a sign of a great champion, really. It's it shows great character, I think, to continue to win those titles. And, you know, I just want to be the best that I can be, really.
You want to hang on to them, you don't want to give them away.
Exactly, yeah. That's
it's incredible.
You're going for a fifth world title next month in Jeju.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your preparations, or even as well from a historical perspective, what it's going to mean to you to compete even in a fifth one, let alone?
It means an awful lot to me. These titles mean just as much to me as an Olympic title as well. And I prepared well, and so I always go into every competition 100% prepared, I think. And I don't leave any stone unturned, I don't think. And I feel great, but it's never going to be easy, obviously. There's going to be tough fights out there, but if I box to my best and box to my potential, I think it might be hard to, hopefully it'll be hard to be.
Eric, just how hard is it to win a medal at the World Championships? Like, you've been to a few, you know the crack with it.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard, you know, because like, oh, you think about all these, you know, you could win to a major championship and it could be 60 boxers in your weight. Mm-hmm. Now, every one of these boxers have dreamed about becoming a major medal winner from the time they laced on gloves. So when you've got 60 boxers, you know, approximately 60 boxers in the one tournament, in the one division, and they are all after the same goal, it's extremely difficult, you know? And you have to focus on one fight at a time. And I know you say you're looking for a bit of luck on the draw and luck on the breaks, but it's not. This is where you make your luck, in here, in the gym, sparring. You know, Katie sparring me, never, as I said earlier, not fussing about things, getting up in the morning, doing your running. Even, she said it herself, she doesn't like to do it sometimes, but she has to do it in order to keep her titles. So, you know, when you've got 50, 60 boxers and everyone's aiming for that one goal, you know, you need to make sure that you've left no stone unturned. And I think that's what has been the driving force behind Katie's success. She's never left a stone unturned. I've had blips in my career, ups and downs. There's an old story I used to tell. I celebrated after everything I won. I celebrated for that long and that hard. When I came back, I had to learn out the box again when I came back to the club. But it's not like that today. Today is good, you know what I mean? I'm enjoying it now, no pressure. I don't have to worry about holding on to my funding or anything like that. I'm just enjoying it and I'm loving it. I'm back in love with the game, because that's why I joined boxing in the first place, because I love it. Not about money, not about titles, anything like that. I just love it. You know, it's an escape for me, and it's just an escape from reality, where you go in and it's brilliant. The buzz that comes with it, like, you know, to be in peak physical condition. There's no better place to be, is there? Like, when you're just like feeling great. And like I said, I'm 29 now. I can't, you know, I'm not going to do it for the rest of my life. So I'll enjoy the next couple of years training.
And just to ask there, Katie, Eric was talking about the importance of preparation and being in peak physical condition. Now, those of us at ringside, maybe with the exception of Pete, would probably be on the floor now after those six rounds. Can you just describe to us in terms of your, like, physically, how do you feel after going six tough rounds there? I mean, is it just water off a duck's back, or how do you feel? You're sitting, or you're on one knee here, I should say, and you're kind of dripping with sweat after a tough few rounds. But how do you feel physically?
Yeah, I think it can be quite tough when you're training so constantly. Sometimes you get up and you are very tired as well. You don't feel the best as well. Sometimes you go into sparring a bit more tired than usual, but. Especially from last night, I think I did 15 rounds of sparring last night as well. So I was I wasn't feeling 100% today, but even still, Eric's been one of my main sparring partners coming up to the Olympics. He was my main sparring partner as well, and you have to be in top shape even to land one punch because he's so tricky. So it's just great to get those few rounds in, and it definitely, you know, does me confidence the world of good as well, knowing that I did do the six rounds with Eric. And that's, as I said, they're the spars that really make the difference, and I don't think I'd be sitting here as an Olympic champion without the spars with Eric as well, because he was my main sparring partner coming up to those Olympics as well. So I'm just so grateful, really, for him even taking his time out and coming out, helping me with my preparation, constantly coming up to these major competitions. But yeah, I feel great, and I'm looking forward to hopefully defending my world title.
How long does that partnership go back? When did you first share a ring together, do you recall?
Juniors, would it be?
Junior level.
Around junior level. 16, 17.
What were your first impressions, Eric?
Oh, so she was amazing. Katie came to the... I was in the World Championships in Chicago in 2007, and Katie was invited there as a special guest. And it was actually a test, an unofficial test to get ladies boxing into the Olympic Games in London, or even Rio. And Katie performed there on the final stage. I remember all the English team actually turned around and said to me, "Wow, do you spar with her?" I said, "Yeah, I spar with her all the time." They said, "Wow, what a talent! She got a standing ovation in the stadium." And ladies boxing appeared on the Olympic stage much sooner than we thought, as a result of that performance, you know. But yeah, right from the very start, Katie was probably the only female boxer. It's a well known fact now that she was the only female boxer when we were growing up in Ireland, amateur anyways, and so she had to train with us all the time, you know. And I think it's a credit to her for not shying away from the challenge, you know. She broke down barriers all her career and all her life, and she just kept, you know, as I said, she never caused a fuss. She just kept turning up and putting in the work, grinding it out, hard grafting, hard work, dedication, and she kept sparring with us. And she's made me a better boxer from her skill, not only from sparring with her, but from watching her, from watching what she does, not only inside the ring and inside the gym, but outside the ring as well. She's a complete professional. So, I mean, there's not one sporting athlete, I don't think, that can not learn anything and learn something from Katie Taylor.
Katie, your own thoughts on the relationship as well as you've built up with Eric in terms of your preparation?
Oh, it's been incredible. As I said, I trained Eric since I was maybe 15 or 16 here in the high performance, so I just learned so much from even watching these guys as well, even shadow boxing in sparring, and even the advice that he gives me as well from week to week. He's just so encouraging all the time, so supportive. And as I said, I don't think I with my preparation coming up to even the Olympics, he went out of his way, traveled over to Italy for a training camp. He wasn't on funding there at the time as well. I just took his 2 weeks off work or whatever to help me with my preparation for London. There are the things that people don't know about as well, that he just helped me with my preparation. And I was going into those Olympics, you know, so prepared because of those spars with him, and just the advice that he gave me and his support has just been incredible over the years. So it's quite amazing actually. Yeah.
So what sort of shape is our man Eric in anyway? He's just gone back sparring, yeah. Looking to enter the seniors again to win a sixth title, is it, Eric?
If I'm lucky, if God be good to me.
So what sort of shape is he in? Did he cause you any trouble? Did he hurt you today? Was there anything that caught you by surprise?
He always hurts me with a body shot, actually, the uppercut to the body always catches me. I think in every spar, actually, you must catch me with that body shot.
It took me 20 years to figure that one out. I can land one shot on her, you know. She has a chink in her armour somewhere, you know.
He's always as tricky as ever. It's so hard to land any clean punches on him, and he never loses it, really. He's always so sharp, I think. Even if he takes a few weeks off, maybe one or two spars, and he's as sharp as ever again. So that's just the type of talent he is. And I think everyone here in the high performance miss him so much, even training. He's he's such a great character in the gym as well. And you need those people in the gym. And I think he's definitely I see him as a favourite going into the All-Irelands always. So I think it's all there for him to win.
Hope you enjoyed that. Eric, are you still sore?
Still recovering, Kevin. Yeah, I still need a few more physio appointments after that. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't think there's an athlete in Ireland or indeed the world that wouldn't enjoy having a training session and getting to do six rounds of sparring.
I wouldn't enjoy it.
But maybe you're not an athlete though, Kev.
She punches hard. It's mad when you see it up close. I've watched Katie boxing numerous times, but it's the first time I saw you two guys sparring, and yeah, it was just impressive. It was great to look at.
Yeah, she's very quick. She really is. And a lot of, you know, it's a familiar question. People say, "Eric, does she hit hard?" And I said, "Does she what?" You know, Katie has a very, very strong right hand. Very powerful. And when she does hit you, you feel it in your toes. But I tell you, I'm not looking forward to sparring her again, even though I am booked in to spar her again next week.
Brilliant. Well, look, women's boxing has gone from strength to strength in Ireland. Katie's obviously the spearhead of this, and she's gone to the World Championships in a four-woman team, I believe, next month. But Ireland, just to show the kind of strength and depth, Ireland didn't even send a team to the Queen's Cup in Germany last week, but the guys in the Leinster Council got together, and they wanted to send a team. So they're contacted, and they wanted to put across the results, and they're pretty eye-catching, like, for a province to go to a top international competition with the UK. We all know their strength at the minute, and Kazakhstan and Germany and Poland and all this. But a girl, Natasha Logan, she won Best Junior Gold in 52 kilos. Amy Broadhurst won Best Youth Boxer, 57 kilos gold. There was gold for Shane O'Neill and gold for Joanne Richards. There was silver for Shannon Edge and Niamh Early, and there was more bronze as well, Shauna Blaney and Rebecca Gorman. It's pretty great achievements. And apparently the heads of, like, England were there, or the UK were there, to prepare for the World Championships, you know, next month, and Ireland didn't have a team there, and all the major nations were asking the Irish, why are you just a province? But they kind of punched above their weight anyway, so it's kind of the sort of results we're getting used to. We want to move to pro boxing now. There was a bit of an extravaganza in England at the weekend, Ciarán. Three different channels showing live boxing. It's gone crazy.
Yeah, three different shows. It's obviously great to see so many fighters busy. You'd wonder how beneficial it is in terms of splitting the audience, because obviously Channel 5 would probably get a huge audience for the domestic market there. And
did you see the stat during the week that it was the first world title fight on terrestrial TV in the UK in God knows how many years? A long time.
The first one since Froch, I think, for first
Jean Pascal.
Pascal, yeah. So, like, I mean, that's a fair few years ago, and it's a pity that there hasn't been more, I suppose, to bring in a terrestrial audience, because obviously the popularity increases. Now, you've had, I suppose, subsequent cards like the Froch Groves fight that attracts the imagination with box office advertising and that. But looking at the show on Channel 5, there was a loss for Stuart Hall in his world title fight, and then more interesting, I suppose, on the world title scene in the busy middleweight division, Martin Murray getting a win, which sets him up for the Golovkin fight.
Is that the opposite, like, of winning the Mayweather lottery, is like getting the Golovkin curse? Like, because who wants to fight that man?
Getting the short straw, yeah. You don't know whether you fancy it. I suppose Murray's a tough customer. It's just Golovkin's making mincemeat of everyone, so I don't know whether it's an appealing fight for anyone.
Back to those Kazakhs again, eh? And there's been a stadium fight, looks to have been set up in England as well, between Tommy Coyle and Luke Campbell.
I don't think it warrants a stadium fight. Like, you know, how big is the stadium?
It's probably one the rugby league team or something.
I'd imagine it's probably the KC Arena. They had Campbell in there, I think, for maybe his pro debut, where it was a fairly stacked card.
That's right.
So it seems as though he has a huge amount of popularity in Hull. We were speaking earlier about, I think he was given the freedom of the city at one stage after his Olympic win. So if they attract the audience, then I suppose that's what makes it a stadium fight, really, whether it's the profile of the fight or not.
It's great for a town like Hull as well to have two, you know, decent boxers that way. I think Campbell's going to go through him for a shortcut, though, to be honest with you. He's going to take him apart.
Me too, and if the demand is there for the tickets, then why not? But I just think, like, a stadium fight maybe should hold the reins a little bit and hold back for maybe something you know, that's worth more, like a European title or world title fight. Like, you know, he's definitely heading in that direction, Luke Campbell is, but you know, that's the thing about English boxing at the moment, the domestic scene, it's huge.
England's, or the Team GB's captain at the 2012 Olympic Games, Tom Stalker, his professional career came to an abrupt, it's been temporarily halted anyway, after he's been stopped by a young guy he's sparred in endless rounds with, but he couldn't survive a professional fight with him the other night.
Yeah, I would agree in temporarily halted. I wouldn't say it's the end by any stretch of the imagination, because Tom, he's a really, really good guy. Personally, he's a good friend of mine. We've boxed twice. Thomas winning one and myself winning one. He joined boxing late on in life, you know. I think he was 19 or 20, and I steered him away from trouble. He got himself into all sorts of bother as a youngster, and you know, boxing was his saviour. It really was his saviour, and he found solace in it, and he excelled at boxing. Excelled so much that he captained the Great Britain team in the Olympic Games in 2012. He was very, very unfortunate not to. I think he lost by a point in the quarterfinal of the Olympic Games.
Yeah, tough one. Yeah,
it was really, really tough one for him to swallow. But, you know, he came up against, I have to say this, since Thomas has switched to the professional game, he was a world-class amateur, there's no doubt about that. He was a world-class amateur boxer, but he never seemed to really, he never made the transition.
The power, isn't it?
Yes,
well,
the power. He's lacking the power. He has all the ability. He's plenty of heart, but he never brought the professional kind of boxing style out in himself. He still has the amateur style, and you need to be able to put guys you know, down. You need to be able to hurt guys in the professional game because that's what it's about. But Tom, on the other hand, unfortunately, he just hasn't got that appealing style to the public, the professional style where it's exciting and it's you know, has people on the edge of their seats. He just doesn't have that. He's a lovely guy, a really genuine guy, a lovely boxer, a really great heart. He would punch all it, but he's lacking that something that you need. You need that special ingredient when you're going into the professional.
Credit to Catterall as well. That was an impressive display. Now I want to move on to somebody who definitely is not lacking power. We saw his last fight on the ropes, fifth round. John Jackson is coming on strong. And what do you call him, Eric?
I call him the Great White Hope, Mr. Andy Lay.
He's our next guest. You're listening to Fourth Humps Irish Boxing Podcast. Andy Lay.
Oh, good uppercut by Jackson.
Another right hand lands. Body shot almost knocks Lee through the ropes. Jackson's power is simply devastating Lee. There's a perfect right-hand counter off the ropes. And Benji Esteves stops the fight. What an amazing comeback knockout for Andy Lay.
Just what I told you, Jim. Coming to Andy Lay, not respecting his punch of power, not thinking that he's capable of hurting you, and that's what happened. He got too confident at chasing the guy down, who's still very dangerous, and ran right into a perfectly timed right hook.
Okay, on Fourth Humps Irish Boxing Podcast, we are delighted to be joined by world title challenger Andy Lay. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Andy, I believe some news has dropped for you in the past week. Would you care to fill us in, please?
Well, it's not certainty yet. It's still being worked out. There's a good chance that I'll fight Matt Karbov December 13th in Las Vegas for the WBO Middleweight Championship. So, obviously a big fight and exciting news. Hopefully this week it'll all be put to bed and contract signed, and then, you know, I've been training away for the last few weeks, and I'm in London now training later on again today, so hopefully, you know, it'll come off and by the end of the year I'll be world champion.
Great stuff. I get the impression from hearing from the promoters that it's all agreed in principle and it's just basically dotting the T's and crossing the I's. Would that be...
Yeah, it's never that simple though, and you know, that's the reason why a lot of fights that should happen don't happen. But it's looking good, and this week will be the end of all this and uncertainty, and then that's, like you say, just sign the dotted line and get the fight on.
Excellent. So Matt Karabov is a name that's been on your lips here for quite a while. You've known that you'd probably be fighting this guy. You know, it looked like it could have been in Dublin, back to Vegas, but Karabov is an opponent you've been focusing on now at this stage. Are you confident in taking the win against him?
Yeah, I think it's a very well matched fight. You know, he's a good technical boxer. He's good fast hands, very good feet, good feints. And as we all know, he was probably the best amateur in the world when he was amateur. And as I said, since then, he hasn't really done a whole lot in the professionals. But he has beaten every opponent and looked good in some fights, and not other fights not look so good. But like I said, it'll be a hard fight. We're fighting for world championships. No fight's going to be easy, but I'm very confident of beating him. I think I can do anything he does, but I have a little bit more experience in the professional game and a bigger punch than he has, and it'll only be, you know, I think eventually, somewhere that in the fight, he might win a couple of rounds boxing and I'll win a few rounds, but eventually we're going to have to trade, and when I land, he's going to know it, you know.
Eric, how's things, brother?
Hi, Eric. Good to hear you, man.
Yeah. Hope training's going well.
Training's going good. I was in Monaco training for 2 weeks with Adam, and I'm in London now. I'll be training here for a week and then back to Monaco, and I'll see out the rest of the camp over there. So
Adam, he's based in Monaco now. Isn't that where he's based? And I was just wondering, like, how is the relationship now? Because I suppose you've had enough time now to settle in and get to know Adam, and how is that materialising? How's it going for you?
It's gone brilliant. It's gone from strength to strength. Me and Adam very close in and out of the ring, and everything he says to me in the gym just makes sense. And he's a guy who knows exactly when he says something, there's a lot of thought behind what he says, and he knows exactly what he wants, and he is able to verbalize and articulate exactly what he wants, even though sometimes there's no name for what he's trying to say or no actual, you know, method of saying it, like in terms of the movement or the attitude that you carry with each move. And he's a brilliant coach, one of the best, you know, the top, definitely, the top, you know, top three coaches I've trained with, not in any particular order, but Zora Antia, Manuel Stewart and Adam Booth. And, you know, the three of them, they share a lot of similarities, all different as well, in a lot of ways, but they also share a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and outside the ring, me and Adam are great. You know, when I stay with him in his house when I'm here a lot of the time, coming up to fights, and we spend a lot of time together, you know, away from the gym. So
that's been your pattern, hasn't it, in your career? You've spent a lot of time with your coaches, almost like a father son relationship. I mean, you've practically lived with Emmanuel Stewart, and now, you know, I know how close you were to Zora Antia as well, and been to his house many times for dinner and vice versa. And now you're with Adam, and you know, you spend a lot of time with Adam and his family and his house. And one thing that really impressed me with Adam was, it was a number, maybe three or four fights back, or maybe your first fight together, is when he was doing the corner work with you. He was sitting down in his hunkers in front of you while you were on the corner stool, and he was rubbing some ice into the back of your neck, and he was talking like almost in a whispering kind of a fashion. And he was just, he knew what he wanted to say, but he was saying it from a very calm point of view. Is that what you prefer, Andy, when you're in the corner?
Yeah, I think so. As an old trainer once said to me, that when you come back to the corner, that's your respite, and that should be like your sanctuary almost. You know, when you get to the corner, you get a coach who's shouting in your face, and that's emotional stress as well, you know, and it takes a lot out of you just trying to process the information if the coach is shouting. And I just never respond to that. I always respond to calm, just telling you exactly what, make it precise, tell me exactly what I need to do, and I'll go out there and do it to the best of what I can, you know. And Adam's very good in the corner. Like you said, he's very calm and only says a few words. And interesting, as you said, about being on the top, Adam always tries to sit at eye level or below the eye level of the fighter, because when the coach stands over the top of the fighter, that's also, you know, crowding and encroaching on his space as well. Mm. So he said that to me one time when I'm in the corner. Like, I said, why do you always sit so low in the corner? Because it's more common for a fighter to sit on a higher plane. You know, like when you're in a meeting or something, or someone like just puts you in their lower seat if they're trying to talk, you know, it makes you feel inferior or immediately. So,
absolutely.
He thinks all aspects of the fight, and that's just one small thing that makes a difference, you know.
It's a credit to him for thinking along those lines, because, as you know, boxing, it is a physical sport, but it's an emotional sport as well, and it's about, you know, getting that right ingredients, you know. And it's about each boxer, how we all have our different styles and how we have our different methods. Some like to, you know, stand up in the corner, some like to sit down, but, you know, it seems like Adam he's designed his coaching skills to that of the boxer's desires.
Yeah, and if I feel strongly about anything that he does that I would like to change, he takes it on and he tries it, and if he thinks another way is better, he'd explain to me why he thinks it's better. So I think a lot of coaches are similar, you know.
There's always good explanation behind it, and I think that's so important, you know, when a coach is dealing with a boxer like that, the boxer gets a good explanation in why we are doing this, why not. A prime example of Adam's coaching would have been your fight against Jackson in America. You know, after four rounds, Andy, you were under the cosh, you know. It was, you know, it's a well-known fact, you were losing the fight up until that stage when you landed the sucker punch, you know, that punch, that devastating punch that put the right uppercut that put Jackson down. But just, I suppose, when you look at Adam's coaching skill up until that point, there would have been a number of coaches, I certainly know anyway, who maybe would have lost the head a little bit in the corner as a result of how you were performing in the earlier rounds, but he kept his cool. I was speaking to you before and you said, he told me to believe in myself and to not become desperate. Is that a word?
Exactly. And he said, like, we both knew there's plenty of that. And with Adam, it's not about ego. Coaches lose their egg or lose their, because they're worried about how it reflects on them if their fighter's not performing well. And that's down to their ego, you know, and their limits. But Adam, it's not about ego. You know, he's simply for the fighter. He's a great coach, and you know, as a person, he's equally as good. So I'm very lucky to be training with him.
It's been an interesting 2014 for you. You've had two fights. You won't have been happy with your first performance down at light middleweight against Frank Hirosh Horta, but then you pulled out that knockout against John Jackson. But it's also been a year in which you've been linked with world title fights against Gennady Golovkin,
which kind of fell through after the unfortunate circumstances in which his father passed away. There was also a story linking you with strongly with a fight with Kid Chocolate that never materialised. And then it looked at one stage like you were going to fight Miguel Cotto. Did you think, you know, after all these opportunities kind of fell through or didn't come about, that you wouldn't be getting a title shot in 2014 until this Karabov?
Yeah, but like I said, I wasn't that panicked by it. I was disappointed with some of it, especially the Cotto one. That looked like it was, you know, it was going to happen. It was all over the internet. And then he decided not to fight anymore this year. You know, it's disappointing, but I've been in boxing so long now and I've become accustomed to these fights that never really get your expectations up until you've had a contract, until you're in the training camp. And that's almost until you're on the flight, on the way to the fight. You know, it's you kind of just kind of stay grounded because you know at any time if I can get cancelled or something can happen unexpected. And but I never lost sight because I know I'm only like one or two fights. If I didn't get a world title, I knew I was only one or two of the right fights away from having it again. And now I have, like, it worked out in the end that I have this fight with Karabov lined up, and if all goes well, I'll be champion before the end of the year.
How do you think the Vegas factor is going to be? Because we spoke before when the fight was potentially going to be held in Dublin and you were kind of elated that it would give you a home advantage, like the complete opposite of what you had in your first world title shot against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in El Paso in 2012. So Dublin would have given you a home advantage. Where do you think Vegas is going to fit you?
I don't know. It's nice to go to Vegas. You know, I fought there before, early in my career, and it's nice to go out there and be part of a big show in Las Vegas. You know, it's next to Madison Square Garden. Vegas is where everybody wants to fight, so it has its own, and I'm fighting at home, has its own pressures and obligations. You know, if you're tough in the building, you have to do a lot of media work and try and sell them, promote the fight, whereas fighting away, you can just, you know, focus on your job and watch yourself and be in control of yourself, and then go over there and do the job really with no external, you know, not pressures, but, you know, obligations and that. So it has its benefits fighting abroad as well as fighting at home. So I just, where the fight is and who it's against, for me, most of the time, doesn't really matter. I don't care who it is, I'll fight anybody. And where it is, it don't really matter, I'll fight anywhere. As long as I'm in good form, as long as I, you know, take care of myself, then that's all that. It's always only about me. That's the way I always approach fights. That it's never about the other person in the other corner. It's always about me.
Hi Andy, it's Kieran Gallagher here.
Hi Kieran.
It's good to have you on the show. Very interesting stuff so far. I know you mentioned there just to say that generally your preparation is always about you. One frustrating thing, I suppose, about your career, but it's also inevitable, is that it's often always equated to your rivals, and particularly Matthew Macklin's your big domestic rival for an Irishman. He has this fight obviously coming up in November, which I suppose the fact that it's home based is going to attract a lot of attention also in the build up for your fight as well. Like, I mean, do you see an advantage of kind of having your world title shot maybe being slightly under the radar, or is that something that might be a bit of an irritation that there mightn't be as much focus on it as of yet?
Well, that stuff doesn't really matter anyway, you know. I don't care. Like, if I won a world title and no one saw it, I wouldn't care, because winning the world title only means something to me anyway, you know what I mean? So all that stuff really doesn't matter. I think the fact that there's Boxing Ireland is a good thing anyway, so no matter who's having it, I'm glad it's on, you know what I mean? So it's a, you know, people want to get, if Macklin does well and has a good fight there, then it only builds for everybody in boxing. You know, if he creates more fans and then I want to have a fight there, then it's more fans that will come to my fight. So yeah,
absolutely.
Not,
yeah,
like, yeah, no, I think worrying about media and all that, it doesn't never bothers me at all, you know.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, the world title scene in middleweight, it's really becoming an interesting one at the moment. I suppose Golovkin's shadow seems to loom large over everyone. But from your own perspective, like, I mean, it's a great opportunity to be fighting for a world title. Interestingly enough, I did see a recent tweet from your trainer, Adam Booth. He said all the intergalactic belts in boxing have shattered the genuine symbol of what a world championship belt used to represent. Now, I know from speaking to you that you'd take a great interest. I mean, you've mentioned Cotto, that you'd like to fight him, and have the opportunity to fight for, I suppose, what would be termed the lineal championship. You're going for the WBO version yourself, and then you have Golovkin out there as well. Just in that context now, for you fighting for a world title, would you tend to agree with Adam, or what would your take be on that?
I think so. I think there's no, like, everyone generally, like, Golovkin is considered the world champion, really. the WBC belt probably the most prestigious one held by Cotto, but if Cotto was to fight Golovkin, I think it'd be maybe 99 people would say Golovkin would win, maybe only the Puerto Ricans would be back in Cotto on that one. So I think the other belts, having other belts in, that does have a value because it gives more fighters more opportunity to fight. If there was only one belt, then there'd only be maybe two championship fights a year, you know?
Yeah.
I think this, I know in the purest sense, having one championship belt is a nice thing, but it would probably be better generally for boxing and to sort everything out. But where there's more belts, then that more people get to fight and more people get to be a champion, you know? And then the champions can fight each other, hopefully fight each other, but I know what Adam I know what he means, and everyone would probably prefer there to be one champion in the one division, but having a couple of those at least does help the sport as well sometimes.
So Andy, back to Eric here, just want to say thank you very much for joining us on Four Tumps Irish Boxing Podcast.
I'm honored to be on it. I'm really proud of it. Yeah, the first podcast. I wish you guys all the best. I think it's a great idea. I think it's going to do very well because I think it's a lot of people be interested in seeing and listening to what goes on. So good on you.
Well, thanks, Andy. We really appreciate that, and we would love it for you to join us again, maybe with some more news, or maybe even when you have that world title over your shoulder.
See you in January.
In January, but hey, we'd love to catch up with you again, maybe in preparation, when you're in training camp.
A few weeks time, give me a call and I'll give you an update.
Brilliant, Andy. Thanks again, pal, and wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Andy.
Good luck to you. All the best. Cheers.
Bye bye.
Okay, you've just heard from the one and only Andy Lee there. As ever, a great talker on boxing, always gives a great insight on boxing. Like you said, Kieran, he's a student of the game. He follows it. Eric, you two guys are long-standing friends.
Yeah, Andy, he's a really, really nice guy. You know, he came down to my two sons' christenings as well. And anytime he's in Ireland, he tries to pay a visit to me. And vice versa, you know, I went to his wedding in France when he got married. And, you know, he's a lovely guy, and his wife, Maud, they're just lovely people. And Andy, you know, has been one of my favourite Irish boxers growing up. Even though we were on the same team, he was actually my favourite Irish boxer. I think there was a Q&A done with me at the 2007 EU Championships in the National Stadium in Dublin, and the Q&A, you know, one of the questions in it was, who's my favourite Irish boxer? And I said Andy Lee, but I didn't tell him, and he was sitting beside me at the actual EU Championships, and he was reading the programme, and then he says, oh, I'm your favourite Irish boxer. And I said, you are, Andy, you know. And he was delighted, like, you know. And no, a really nice guy. And you know, I think he's had a tough career in terms of the, you know, the losses he's had, and having to move country, you know, having to go into Detroit and make a big sacrifice of leaving his family and going to Detroit and spending 7-8 years there. Then his good coach Emmanuel Stewart, who was almost like a father figure in his life, passing away, and then changing coaches, and then losing his world title fight to Chavez. You know, he's had a lot of ups and downs, but you know what, he's still been named amongst the top names in the game. You talk about Kid Chocolate, Miguel Cotto, Matt Korobov now for world title. So he's been there, and that's a good thing. He's still, when you mention Andy Lee, you mention these top fighters, and look, he's on the brink of another world title fight, and you know what, he absolutely deserves it. And he's probably the Mr. Popular, Mr. Nice Guy in world boxing. Everybody loves him. He's not really got a bad bone in his body, and he's just a real genuine guy, and I hope he does it.
Yeah, I saw something like, I know we seem to measure everything nowadays by shares on social media and all this, but I believe his clip, his knockout over Jackson, was one of the most viewed boxing highlights of the year. It was just absolutely picture perfect. And of course, Andy's, like, you know, quite well known in this country from his time commenting on different Olympic games and all, probably keeping you out of a job, Eric, because that was the end.
No offence taken.
He came up on terrestrial TV as well, like, on those shows, so yeah, like,
I think it's great to see him get this opportunity as well, though, because I'm sure we'll probably discuss the fight and how both himself and Korobov are shaping up closer to the date. But in terms of his own career, like, I mean, he's been highlighted by even Billy Walsh in the high performance as kind of one of the ones that got away. And along with Carl Frampton, I suppose he would have been preordained by many of us as a champion waiting and a world champion waiting as a professional. And he's probably had a few bumps along the road, obviously, but it still has the potential to deliver on that. And I suppose getting the opportunity is now one that he has to take. But it's great an opportunity to have.
Yeah, he's got a fairly steely resolve. Like he's had his ups and downs, a few setbacks here and there, but you know, I think two career defeats. But his resolve appears to be strengthened. He's mentally tough. He took the even Golovkin challenge just
absolutely readily. Yeah.
I think it was in April of last year.
You know, professional boxing, Kevin, is probably the most insecure business out there. Yeah. You know, because one minute you have a world title fight, the next minute you don't. You know, and one thing Andy said there, which really struck a chord with me, was that he keeps his expectations low in this game, because he said he doesn't really get excited or tuned in until the dotted line is signed. And I think that's a good kind of a way of going about your business in the professional game, because, like I said, it's most insecure kind of business, you know, to back on fights or to be confident that you're going to get 3-4 fights a year, because you just don't know, between promoters, between injuries, between purses, bids, and you know, TV deals and contracts. It's very insecure, so you've got to really take the good with the bad in it. And you know, fortunately for Andy, he kept plugging through it and he kept soldiering on, and as a result of that, he's ready and on the brink of getting another big fight.
I think it is good timing for him as well, though, because in the sense that he's developing a relationship with Adam Booth, obviously recovering from the death of Emmanuel Stewart, and he was possibly making a move otherwise. But in terms of his career progress, had he taken the Golovkin fight at that time? Now, obviously, you can always say that a fighter will get himself up for a certain level of opponent, and that applies to a certain extent. But if you look at his performances around the time, you mentioned Horta there earlier, Kev, and then I suppose you also have the Jackson performance, which ultimately ended in an impressive like showreel knock. Out, but yeah. He struggled as well. Had he taken the Golovkin fight, I don't think it would have been the right time. It definitely would have been the biggest challenge that he could possibly face.
Well, you transplant the kind of level of performance that fought Horta into Golovkin, and you've got yourself a splatterfest around this Halloween time. It's not pretty. Like,
mightn't be the fairest thing to do, because obviously, if he was fighting Golovkin, he'd be probably up for a bigger fight and up for a bigger challenge or a test. But this fight against a very, very tough opponent, by no means in any way an easy fight, but probably in terms of time wise and his career development, maybe a better challenge for him, maybe a better opportunity.
Yeah. Well, look, guys, thanks a million for bearing with us. This has been our very first show of Four Thumbs Irish Boxing Podcast. I don't believe we ever told you why we're called Four Thumbs. But essentially, we have young Paddy Barnes and Joe Ward to thank for that. Out at the World Championships last year, Joe Ward is going in against the Russian. Paddy Barnes sends out a tweet that I think caught the nation's imagination. What did it say, Eric?
He said, I was speaking to Joe before the fight, and I asked Joe, what's he going to do? And I think Joe said, I'm going to hit the Russian four thumps.
Four thumps.
Four thumps.
But anyway, a name's a name, so we're stuck with it.
There's four of us, so we're four thumps.
Thanks a million for listening, everybody. We'll be back again next week. We'll have more live guests, more features, and we'll even have a few fun things as well. So it's been brilliant. From me, Kevin.
From Kira.
And from Eric and our sound guy here, Mick. Thanks for joining us, guys, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.